We're back for more community conversation today on our morning show visit with WRCO, and glad to have in the studio today public health specialist Evan Ewing from Richland County Health and Human Services to join us today. How are you doing these days, Evan?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Phil. I appreciate it.
Great to have you back in the studio. So are we at the peak of all of this winter sickness that's going around, or are we still going to see that peak yet?
I think we still have a little bit of time left before we're at peak. I know looking at the most recent respiratory report from the Department of Health and Health Services from Wisconsin, looks like influenza is sort of rising the most right now, and then followed by COVID and then RSV as well. So those are kind of the three most common communicable diseases that circulate during winter. Communicable means that they're just spreadable to one another.
It seems like, we always look ahead at like spring fever, but I always kind of like when we kind of get over that hump, you know, because you can get these things year round, but it's a little less likely as we get into the warmer months, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think people are just indoors more. And, you know, obviously after the holidays, there's, you know, you're kind of seeing that spike after the holidays just from people being in enclosed spaces with one another, and can definitely sort of increase that likelihood of getting a respiratory illness just being around other people. I'd say the next thing would probably be like Super Bowl parties if people are having those coming up. I think we're kind of in the full swing of that respiratory virus season.
And this week with the extreme cold weather we've had as well, you know, people just probably don't get out and exercise and get fresh air like they usually do.
Yeah, definitely. I would say people are indoors probably right now more than ever. I know sometimes we'll have warmer temperatures and people can get out, but I think we're definitely seeing that from those holiday get-togethers right now.
I know one of the things that you're always focused on, and you've talked about it when you've been here in the past, is just steps toward a healthy community. That's the goal for your office, sure, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Some of the stuff with specific to respiratory illnesses that you can do to stay healthy. One of those things is staying up to date with your vaccines. It's always important to discuss those with your doctor or healthcare provider. Vaccines like your annual flu shot can help prevent illness and sort of lessen the virus's impact, even if you do end up contracting it. I wanted to mention too, if you're curious about your vaccine history, everyone can obtain their own records via the Wisconsin Immunization Registry, and we call it WIR for short, WIR. And it'll have all of your vaccines that you've received in Wisconsin. And the URL for that is dhfswir.org. And once you're in the site, then you can enter your name, your date of birth, and your social security number. And then you'll be able to see all of your immunizations. And I think of this coming in really handy if there's like a new baby born in your family. For example, my sister-in-law just had a baby, and if we were to visit them, I would check my WIR record to ensure that, you know, my pertussis vaccine is current before being around a child who would be, you know, more susceptible to illness. Another example would be if you were scratched or poked with a rusty nail and you wanted to see if you're up to date with tetanus, it can kind of spare you a call to your provider by using that tool. So I wanted to mention that to people today as well, that you can check that out.
Is tetanus every 10 years? Is that?
I'm not sure, actually.
Did I dream that?
It might be. I don't remember getting one anytime in the past 10 years. So yeah, I think I would say that's probably a good guess. I'm not sure off the top of my head though.
Sure. Sorry to put you on the spot.
No, you're good. You're good. I think some other prevention tips or, you know, things to keep in mind, practicing good hand hygiene. I know we teach our kids this, but sometimes it's often forgotten by adults, and that's the importance of thoroughly washing your hands before touching your eyes, nose, or mouth. So, you know, before you eat. I also try to make it a habit to keep hand sanitizer in my car. So you get in your car after being out and about, you can just sanitize your hands quickly and then, you know, go into your house and you don't have to worry about it as much. But that's definitely a good prevention tip to keep in mind as well.
Yeah, washing hands, and again, I was talking off the air, but it was 5 years ago when the first confirmed COVID case was in America, and just a month or so later, how life changed for us. But the big focus was wash your hands, and they had big campaigns for that and everything, didn't they?
Yeah, definitely. It's a good way to prevent that transmission where, you know, if you do have germs on your hands, I think it's good even for prevention of, you know, just a lot of things, not just COVID. So we teach our kids that. I remember in elementary school, you'd go in and wash your hands before you go eat. I think as we become adults, sometimes we forget about that. So definitely good to do that. Some additional guidance too that was out there, you know, in the height of COVID as well was masking, distancing, and testing. And so the CDC or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they recommend to utilize those precautions if you know that respiratory viruses are causing lots of illness in the community, or if you're around others that have severe risk factors or risk factors for a more severe course of illness, and if you've been exposed to someone who's sick or recovering. So I think a good example would be if you were visiting a relative in a nursing home, where there might be a higher number of cases in that setting. And if those people were sick, it would be a more, could be a more serious course of illness. So it's good to utilize those precautions in that setting. Wanted to mention too, we do have COVID-19 test kits available at Richland County Health and Human Services. So you can go in and just go to the front desk and you can pick up a test kit there. I do want to mention that the expiration dates on those boxes may indicate that they're expired, but the FDA has extended some of the expiration dates. So the ones that we're distributing aren't actually expired, but just a heads up, if you do pick one up and you realize, hey, this is expired, they extended some of those dates. So you can pick one of those up at Health and Human Services too.
If it was several years old, though, it might not be as effective, right? The COVID kit?
Correct. Yeah, they probably wouldn't be recommended to use them. Yeah, if they were, you know, a few years old. I believe there's a, I'm not sure if it's through the FDA specifically, but you can request to have some test kits mailed directly to your address too for free. So that's another way that you could get kits if you have some that are expired.
So you have some at Health and Human Services as well, though, so people can just pick them up then.
Yep.
Okay. Sure. Always good things to know, that's for sure, and steps toward staying healthy and you know, as we mentioned, you're a proponent of exercise and getting out and moving a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I think we have some great physical activity opportunities in Richland County. We have lots of hiking trails, and we do have some great fitness facilities, you know, Simon's Fitness 14, Anytime Fitness. And then the Parks Department also has some great programs in the winter as well. You can rent snowshoes there. They have the open gym as well. So I think there's a lot of opportunities for exercise. I think that sometimes the challenge is just getting started with it.
Sure. That's right. Getting out and getting motivated, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely.
And I think, you know, it's inevitable. We're going to get some sicknesses and illnesses and things like that, but maybe that helps us get over them quicker, right? The better shape we're in.
Yeah. Those would be kind of what I would consider other immune system supports, that, you know, regular exercise, consuming, you know, a balanced, nutritious diet, reducing stress and eliminating harmful habits like smoking, those type of things can help you just be generally healthy.
There are also over-the-counter things, you know, that you can take that supposedly are supposed to thwart off those things. I've never found them to work real well, but maybe it's a placebo. I don't know.
Yeah, there definitely could be some placebo effect in there. Kind of speaking of meds, too, it makes me think of some of the return to work or school guidance. And this kind of ties in with the respiratory viruses, but kind of the general advice for return to work or school would be until you're staying out of work or school until your symptoms are getting better and you're fever free for 24 hours without using over-the-counter meds like Tylenol and those sort of things. And then after that, it would be recommended to take those extra precautions like masking or distancing. And also want to mention too, if you do have respiratory symptoms and you're going to urgent care or the hospital, definitely beneficial to wear a mask just to kind of, you know, protect the staff essentially as you're going in. So, those would be just some kind of last, recommendations around those respiratory viruses.
Those things have really changed again over the years since COVID, and because, you know, people that were recovering before, you know, you had to stay away for, I forget how many days, it was in the teens, I think, before you were supposed to officially go back, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think with some of the the countries too, I think if you traveled into, I believe it was Australia, you had to quarantine for 2 weeks and then complete some testing after that. And then I think for the general guidance, it was 10 days for a while and then it was 5 days. And so now I think the recommendation is just until your symptoms improve and you're fever free for 24 hours without using those fever reducing meds.
Switching gears a little bit, Evan, we'll talk a little bit about radon, and I know we had members of the fire department in here not too long ago, but radon kits are certainly a great thing to have.
Yeah. January is National Radon Action Month, so for those of you that don't know, radon is a dangerous gas that you can't smell or see, and it's naturally produced from rocks and soil in the ground. And it can enter your environment from cracks or gaps under your home and then lead to high levels of radon within your home. And some estimates from the Environmental Protection Agency suggest that 21,000 lung cancer deaths each year are attributable to radon. And 1 in 15 homes in the U.S. contain high levels of radon. So the bad news is if you're a cigarette smoker who's exposed to high levels of radon, you would be 10 times more likely to develop lung cancer than non-smokers who live in homes with high levels of radon. So the test kits become an important prevention tool that you can utilize to essentially identify if you're being exposed to high levels within your home. And those test kits can also be obtained at Richland County Health and Human Services. You just go to the front desk and say you'd like to pick up a radon test kit. You fill out a form and then you can take the kit home and get testing. From the most accurate results, it's important to test in a regularly used room on the lowest level of your home. So an example would be like a living room if you have a finished basement or a playroom or bedroom, something like that. Humidity and drafty conditions can impact the test results, so it's recommended to avoid testing in a kitchen, bathroom, or laundry room. So those are just some sort of parameters around the testing just to get the most accurate results. If you do receive results that are 4 picocuries per liter or higher, then it's recommended to do a second test. And if that test is also 4 picocuries per liter or higher, then it's recommended to contact a radon expert, and they may recommend some low-cost solutions to sort of address the radon levels. If they deem that it's a larger problem, like with your home's foundation, then you may need to contact a radon mitigation contractor. And the number for the radon expert in our area is, I'll just read it off, it's 1-888-569-7236. And I believe they're located in Grant County and they cover our region here. When we look at radon levels in Richland County, Wisconsin DHS actually has a great interactive map where you can see some of the levels by a county within the state. And just looking at the map, they break it down with percent of test results greater than or equal to 4 picocuries per liter. So that would be an elevated level. When we look at the more northern portions of Richland County, like Cazenovia, Viola, and Hillsboro, those are all, Cazenovia is 75%, 64% for Viola, and then 42% for Hillsboro. And then for Richland Center, we're at 36.6% of those test results are elevated. And important to note that the Richland Center sample was 248 homes tested, so that was the largest sample size. Some of those other more less populated areas had a smaller sample size, so I thought that was important to note as well, just so that you're not kind of, just to sort of put that into perspective. Some of the southern portions of the county were a little bit lower, like Lone Rock and Muscadet were below 20%. So seems to be that those more northern areas had more elevated results.
So that's a sample size of those that sent in tests. That percentage is how many came up high then?
The percent of test results that were elevated for those regions. Some of the regions like Hillsboro kind of dip into Vernon County, and Muscadet would be in Grant. But if you're interested, you can check that map out. It's on the Wisconsin DHS website, and you just put in radon, and it's on the page for radon there. When you look at a county like Vernon, they're almost the entire county is over 50%. So definitely is concerning.
So there's a good chance that, you know, you have it in your home in those areas.
Could be, yeah. And that's where, you know, the testing is a great way to find out, especially if you are a homeowner. So you can kind of get to that basement. For example, I live in an apartment complex. We're on the third level. I'm just not going to be in that lower level. So it doesn't really make sense to test in an apartment like that. But if you are on a ground level, I don't think it can hurt either.
Okay. And again, more information can be obtained at Health and Human Services then,
yep,
as well.
Yep.
Good. That's good stuff to know. And then the fire department also talked about carbon monoxide detectors and that kind of thing too, which is a real concern, especially this time of year too.
Yeah, definitely. Carbon monoxide poisoning cases are reportable to the health department. So it does kind of fall into public health as well. Definitely recommended to make sure that your carbon monoxide detectors are... Be sure to test them monthly and then replace those batteries at least once a year. You want to have those on each level of your home as well. And just want to make sure that you're not, running your car engine with your garage door closed, or even if you have windows open, but the door is shut, dangerous levels can still accumulate in there if your car was running in that setting. So definitely important to stay on top of the testing of the alarms and then replacing those batteries each year.
Sure. And hopefully your furnace is working well and everything too.
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely don't want to heat your home with your oven and things like that. Right. Those can be sources of carbon monoxide as well.
Lead poisoning too. You know, they've been kind of trying to get around that a little bit, replacing some pipes and things like that, but it's still a concern, isn't it?
Yeah. I believe some of those... some residents heard from the city utilities about some of those lead service lines. I thought they provided a great letter out to the residents of, you know, where you can contact to get testing done, that kind of stuff. The portion of it related to public health that I wanted to mention was thinking of some of the toys after the holidays, children's toys. I wanted to mention that you can actually visit the United States Consumer Product Safety Commission website, which is cpsc.gov, and you can view any product recalls and safety warnings on that page. So if you wanted to check it for recalls, maybe you got some toys from relatives for your child and you just want to make sure that there weren't any recalls on those, you can go to that website and check that out there. They have other recalls, not just related to lead, but the ones with lead are kind of what public health is more concerned with. And I believe most children now are tested for lead by their primary care provider or at a WIC clinic when they turn one. And I think the most common source of exposure for children would likely be lead paint. And when you look around Richland County, I think most of the homes here are a little bit older. If your home was built before 1978, that's when the use of lead paint was banned for residential use. So if you want to kind of try to assess if you have lead paint on your home, it'll look kind of scaly. Some people describe it to look like alligator or crocodile skin in texture. And some signs of damaged lead paint would be like peeling, chipping, cracking, or bubbling. And if a child inhales lead paint dust or they chew on paint chips, that can be dangerous and lead to some pretty serious health implications.
I would think that we'd be starting to get past that, you know, being that it's been that long, but I'm guessing even some paint that was painted over could be an issue too, couldn't it, Evan?
Yeah, exactly. I think sometimes we'll see where a landlord will paint over it, and then when that paint starts to deteriorate, then some of that older lead paint can kind of come to the surface. The cases where children are tested and it's elevated, those are reported to us at the health department. So the reportable level of blood lead in a child is 3.5 micrograms per deciliter. And so we're notified anytime that a child in the county has an elevated blood lead level. And then we may reach out to those individuals and send resources. If the levels are really high, then we may offer a nurse home visit to assess the environment for potential exposure sources. You think about if you remodeled a home and that had, lead paint there, it could, bring up a lot of lead paint dust. And if there was a child present, they could be inhaling that, and that could lead to those elevated levels.
It's a specific blood test they do then on children to determine that.
Yeah, exactly. So they'll do either a capillary test, which is like a finger stick. That one's maybe a little less accurate in comparison to a venous blood draw. And so if we have elevated levels from a capillary sample, then we'll generally recommend that they get a venous sample to sort of confirm that it's elevated.
Okay. And is that one that's that you have to ask for to be tested for, or how does that work?
I believe providers are supposed to offer it when children turn 1 year old. So your child's pediatrician should recommend that or offer that. And then you can kind of decide if that's something that you want to have done.
For questions, they can contact your office then.
Yeah, they could. Otherwise, their child's primary care provider would be another place to go as well. Or if they utilize WIC, then the WIC clinic can help them as well.
You've talked in the past about CHIP, I'm going to ask you for an update on that, but can you describe what CHIP is?
Yeah, so CHIP stands for Community Health Improvement Plan, and just for some context, local health departments are required to provide a community health assessment and a community health improvement plan every 3 or 5 years. So we're on a 5-year cycle with the county. I believe the hospital is on a 3, and so you may have received a survey from the Richland Hospital recently. I think they sent it out at the beginning of January. And so every 3 or 5 years, we're required to offer this. So we're on that 5-year cycle. And our community health assessment identified mental health and substance misuse as areas of need within our community. So we have now 2 work groups that are tackling those issues. We have our CHIP mental health work group and then our alcohol work group, which is a partnership with the Partners for Prevention Coalition. So each work group meets 1 time per month virtually. And so if you're interested in attending those or getting involved, you can let me know and I'd be happy to get you on that email update list. Just some stuff that the mental health work group is working on. Our overall goal is to improve the mental health of Richland County residents. And so 2 causal factors linked to poor mental health were stigma, which is a set of negative and often unfair beliefs that a society or group of people have about something. So in this case, mental health. And the other was access to services. So in addressing these, specifically with stigma, we sent out a business survey to local businesses within Richland County, and this was in an attempt to better understand the value that employers place in the mental health of their staff, as well as their likelihood to help a staff member struggling with mental health. And we wanted to determine what resources, if any, they're providing to their staff for mental health. We used those surveys to then create a mental health toolkit, and that was sent out to businesses who indicated they wanted to receive some additional resources and information. We tried to get the anonymous survey out to just employees or anyone who works in Richland County to sort of get their perspective as well. So we have the employer and the employee perspective. And the hope is to really just shift that workplace culture to be one that's more aware and just reduce that stigma around mental health. And so, just having more businesses and more people in the community aware of that to reduce that stigma.
Businesses need to be aware, and I think it's like sometimes you can't want to overstep your bounds. I don't know if that's an easy conversation or not.
Yeah, I think definitely that is a concern for sure. I think one thing that we noted in the surveys was from the employee perspective, not getting resources about local providers. So that's something that in addressing access to services, we've been really promoting this network of care resource. And this is a virtual resource where users can, they can take health assessments, they can locate local providers. There's a health library of resources in there. And it serves Grant, Green, Iowa, Lafayette, and Richland counties. And one useful tool is that if you're living in, Richland County, but you're closer to Iowa County, it'll show providers in Iowa County as well. So it's not like, only showing Richland County resources. And that's through the Care Coordination Network, which is part of the Southwestern Wisconsin Community Action Program, or Southwest CAP is kind of how it's abbreviated. So that's a great resource. We're trying to promote that pretty heavily so that people that, if your employer doesn't have an employee assistance program, then, maybe they can at least share that information and you can get access to some services.
Richland County Health and Human Services really is a one-stop shop as we look at that all the things that you can do, because if you get to one person that doesn't have an answer, you can probably find somebody that does, right?
Yeah, definitely. And we all work together, too. We have some members of the behavioral health unit on our mental health, our CHIP mental health work group. And we're, you know, pretty well connected across the agency. So, yeah, if we aren't able to help, then we can point you in the right direction.
Indeed. Anything else you wanted to add with your visit here?
No, just if you want to get involved in those work groups, you can call Richland County Health and Human Services, just the main line, 608-647-8821, and just ask for Evan, and then I can get you on our email list for all of those updates.
The goal, and I think the key word is always prevention, isn't it, for a lot of things?
Yeah, definitely. We promote health, we try to prevent disease and illness, and then try to protect the community as well. So those are kind of the three things that are identified within public health.
And we just hope we get over the hump here from all of the sickness that we've had recently.
Yeah. Definitely follow those guidelines and those precautions. They can at least help reduce your chances of getting one of those respiratory viruses.
You get the numbers from the state, I think you told me, every Friday. So it looks back. But have you seen that, you know, peak lately, or what does it look like?
Yeah, so looking at the percent positive for PCR tests, PCR is polymerase chain reaction. It's a type of nasopharyngeal swab test that is really accurate. It looks like the percentage of influenza is kind of more steeply spiking right now, and then COVID and RSV are not, they're still increasing, but they're not quite as abrupt, I guess, in terms of that spike. I don't think we're at the peak yet, but it's definitely increasing right now.
Do you see the weather having much to do with that? Like where it's it's been kind of a barren winter without snow and whatnot.
Yeah, it'd be tough to say. I think last year it spiked a little bit earlier, but yeah, it'd be tough to pinpoint a specific factor for that cause, but. Yeah, it'd be tough to say. I know we had a spike in COVID during in September, so you know that may contribute to maybe a little bit lower number of cases right now. But it would be hard to say for sure.
I know people always say, "Well, you know, we need some cold to kill those germs." I don't know if that's actually something that happens or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. it would be tough to say, but. Yeah, it is definitely something to be aware of and take those precautions like you can right now.
Well, we appreciate your expertise, Evan. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You're going to be coming back quarterly, so you'll have, when we get better weather, we'll probably have some other things to talk about with the spring coming up.
Yeah, definitely. I know Mental Health Month is in May. In May, so we'll have probably have some stuff for that coming up as well.
Very important.
Yeah, definitely.
Good. Well, thanks for what you do.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You bet. Joining us today, Evan Ewing, who is a public health specialist with Richland County Health and Human Services. And you can give him a call again, 608-649-5965.